This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN1290, TSN1290.ca. You can follow us on Twitter, at Illegal Curve. You can follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And the website is www.IllegalCurve.com. We're going to get Matty Lachlan on the phone from WFAN Radio momentarily. He's the Devils broadcaster.
Just landed in Winnipeg, right?
Yeah, in Winnipeg, and we're going to hook up with him momentarily. Yep. Guys, before we do, I just want you guys to take this conversation for a second. You know, what's one area that you think the Jets can really expose on the Devils tomorrow while we wait for Matty Lachlan?
Well, we talked about I think you could say there's some issues with foot speed on the squad. It's a little bit an older squad. Ezzie Ryder's not the best skater. Jagr doesn't skate like he used to. So there, again, we talk about the Jets. Jets can skate. You know, Kane can skate. Sadaguchi can skate. So, you know, Volchenkov, as you mentioned, Ezzie, last segment, to slow down a bit. These are guys you can use your speed a little bit against, I think, and you'd hope the Jets can keep a good pace to the game. I think pace is a big issue. We've talked about many things. But that would be, to me, a big point, is dictating the pace tomorrow. Skating, because Devils, I don't think, are the quickest squad out there right now.
I'd agree with that. And the Devils, the reason why they were so successful a couple years back and they were able to go to the Stanley Cup Finals was because they were so aggressive and they were a fast team. And really, that's changed quite a bit. And, you know, you lose Zach Parise. He was a really fast guy. Yeah. And
Kovalchuk.
They've really missed him. Kovalchuk as well. And, you know, I know that they've acquired Ryan Clough and Michael Ryder and Jagr and other players, but you know, it's going to be tough. It's going to be more of a scoring by committee type of approach for the Devils last year. They're going to have to win closer games, rely on their goaltending quite a bit. Corey Schneider has the ability to steal games. That's in their favor.
Mm-hmm.
And many times in that Eastern Conference, in that Metropolitan Division, that might be tough when you're going up against the Pittsburghs and teams like that. So Detroit, it's going to be tough for the Devils this weekend in the playoffs.
Having a couple difficulties hooking up with Matty Lachlan, Remus is working hard at getting those underway, so we'll keep trying to get him on momentarily. I'm sure that will be successful. You know, I like the Devils' moves in the offseason, especially with, you know, losing Kovalchuk. You know, it came out of nowhere, and I don't mind how they've bounced back from that in sort of trying to replace. I mean, you're never going to replace Ilya Kovalchuk. It's just not going to happen. But I don't mind the moves as a bit of a temporary stopgap for what they've done.
Ryan closed the contract's no temporary stopgap.
Well, fine, but So referring more to Brunner and Jagr at that point.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I guess collectively they're trying to attack the scoring from that. Attack the scoring in a collective manner. I don't think it's a playoff team, Drew. So
no, I don't think it's a playoff team because of the offense. I think it's not a playoff team because of the defense.
But when you're spending that money, you could be spending it on defense. You have
Fair
the
enough.
Option. Your hands aren't tied.
Devils have actually a lot of money locked up in their defensemen. Zidlicky makes some coin, and Volchenkov makes some coin. And right now, that's just not a good enough defense for the Devils the way they've played. And it's going to be tough for them to score goals. And you know, the Jets are as far as the next five games coming up here at home, the Devils are probably the easiest prey for the Jets if you want to look at it like that.
Sure. Well, after tomorrow night against the Devils, they have Montreal on Tuesday, and then St. Louis on Friday. And I don't think I'm telling tales out of school when I say that the St. Louis Blues are a far better team than the Winnipeg Jets are.
They're a better team, that's for sure.
Yeah. So I mean, if the Jets want to, you know, end the sort of the disappointing performance that they've had over the last couple of the games,
they'll crank it up for that St. Louis game, though. You know, because they have to, and they will. It'll be better. They'll play better in that game for sure.
You think?
For sure. Because they have to. They know they have to.
Why didn't? And do you think they just underestimated Dallas last night? Then
a little bit, definitely underestimated Anaheim. Minnesota, I just don't think. Apparently, I didn't see that game. They play well, and Minnesota kind of stifled them in terms of all aspects of the game defensively. Minnesota's a very good defensively oriented team, but the other two teams that they played against, I mean, the Jets played better against LA, for sure. I mean, LA played better in the first 20 minutes. I thought the Jets dominated the next 20 and then probably the first 10 or 15 of the third period. So they outplayed them.
Now, Let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. He's our very good friend, Devils radio broadcaster on WFAN, Matt Lachlan. My God, man, are you hard to get a hold of through hotel security there? Matt, are you there?
Yeah, hello.
How are you? Can you hear us?
I'm good. Yeah, I can hear you just fine. I'm laughing because, when I got the call saying they're blocking your calls, I said, what am I? I must be. It's like Jonathan Taves back in Winnipeg, kind of trying to stay low. Everyone's after him, but not quite at that level. But I'm glad we got that straightened out.
Well, Matty, welcome back to Winnipeg. And, we're going to start talking about the Devils, of course, ahead of tomorrow night's Devils-Jets game at MTS Center. You know, you look at the Devils' record, and it sort of belies what's actually happened on the ice. You know, they've been competitive in all, with the exception of maybe the first game in Pittsburgh, they've been competitive in their last four games, each of them losing by a goal, a couple of them in a shootout, couple one in overtime. You know, why haven't the Devils been able to pull out any victories so far this season?
Yeah, and even beyond that, what's perplexing is that they've had leads in those games, and they've just not been able to extend them or hold off a charge from the other team. So, at this point, and I know Devils fans, everywhere, particularly back home, are very, very concerned, and the grumbles have begun, and understandably so. I mean, let's face it, they haven't won in their first five games. But I think looking at it, they're clearly close. Up 3-0 in Edmonton, up 2-0 in Vancouver, had leads last night. So it's just a matter, and it's a cliche, and it's tired, and it's old. You know, that 60-minute game. But I think more they've got to find a way to put the hammer down when they've taken an advantage. Monday, 3-0, actually 2-0 in the first. It eventually became 3-0. And Jason LaBarbera was in goal, and he looked very shaky. And the Devils scored two goals on their first five shots. And it had the look and feel of, hey, if we just put some pucks on this guy, we might get four before the period's over. But after that second goal, a penalty occurred. They stopped putting pucks on net. Some momentum shifted Edmonton's way. And even though it still was 2-0 after one, it had the makings early on of being something bigger than that. So, the Devils have had periods where they just haven't put pucks on net enough and keep that pressure up. So, a lot of good getting the leads, but just not enough. So, we'll see as tomorrow's game plays out. Thursday we're in Ottawa and then home for the Rangers a week from today. Give this team 10 games, maybe 10 games at home before we can really judge where they're at. But I think they're awfully close. But until they get that first one, there should be a lot of questions, no doubt.
Matt, tons of people are talking about, the Marty Brodeur and Corey Schneider and how they're going to split time. How do you think Pete DeBoer has handled that thus far, and how do you think he's going to handle it throughout the season?
Yeah, I think it's worked out really well thus far. And the benefit, if you will, is that of the first five games, four of them have been packaged as back-to-backs. And so the last couple of years, Marty has not played in back-to-back. So it was easy to just split the workload. So Marty gets the nod last night. Not sure what's going to happen tomorrow, but Pete has said, listen, Marty's our number one goalie, and we've got a great 1A, and he hasn't committed to what the breakdown will be. I think he's going to let it unfold. I think he's going to see how Marty plays, how Corey plays, and make the decision that's best for the team. Last night was Marty's best of the three that he has played, so that was a good sign. And my guess is that the numbers, as long as Marty continues to hold up his end of the bargain, which is an incredible statement to make about one of the all-time best goalies, but at 41, his play cannot slip if he's going to maintain that spot, and he knows it. So as long as he maintains a good level of play, I think the numbers will shade slightly toward him, but we have so many back-to-backs that Corey's going to get a lot of work.
Matty, before you came on, we were talking about Patrick Eliash and Jaromír Jágr, both, of course, from the Czech Republic, and they've been paired up on the same line. They actually haven't really played that much together, I think a little bit for the Czech Republic in international play, but they've been pretty good together, developing some good chemistry there. How do you see their effectiveness progressing as the season carries on?
Well, so far, as they've been put together and then Dynis Zubris has joined them, they've been the Devils' most effective line. And I asked Patrick yesterday, I said, and listen, Patrick's numbers are very good. He's coming up on 1,100 games. Barring something unforeseen, he'll have over 1,000 points. He's been on two Stanley Cup championship teams. So his resume is pretty good. It's not Jaromir Jagr's, but it's still a very good resume. And so I said to Patrick, I said, you must be having fun, right? And he said, well, you know, that's a little overblown. Yeah, I'm enjoying it because Jagr's a terrific player, but it's not like there's an extra jump in Patrick's step. I think he was fibbing just a little bit. and only because they're fellow countrymen, they haven't played much together, and Jagr still has incredible skills, and they see the game the same way. So I think it's been a great fit so far. And Zubras adds that element of responsibility and you know, just all those simple little things that don't show up in the scorecard. In fact, last night it did show up on the score sheet. He had a goal, but it was a circumstance where Bryce Salvador was pinching in, and Zubras went to the point to cover him, and the puck came out to him, and he scored a goal. So he does those things. He's got a well-rounded game. He's just not going to get on the score sheet all that often. So it's been a pretty good trio.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca. We're joined by New Jersey Devils play-by-play man Matt Lachlan talking about the Devils ahead of their game tomorrow night at MTS Center against the Winnipeg Jets. Matt, two other guys that the Devils brought in this offseason, Damian Brunner and Michael Ryder. How have they played so far this year for the team from the Swampland?
Brunner's been terrific. You know, he's got 5 points, leads the team in scoring, has 3 goals. Tops in that category. So he's been good. I think they're still trying to find a line on which he can click on a regular basis. But, you know, he's given the team an element of speed that, you know, in general is missing for the club. So that's been a very good addition to the team. And Michael Ryder has been good. But I think there's more there. He hasn't shot the puck a lot. We were kidding about it yesterday, and he said, well, I think in some barns I haven't gotten credit for a few, so maybe the numbers should be a little higher. But he's got a wicked shot, and again, I think it's part of the overall problem with the Devils, the issue right now with so many new faces, trying to find the combinations that work best. And so Pete continues to shuffle guys around, and until there's that comfort level and a fit that becomes apparent, as it is with Zubras, Eliash, and Jagr, that rotation, that experimentation will continue. So we may not see the best of some of those guys until they, you know, get that comfortable combination. But so far, it's been good. Both Brunner and Ryder have been good. But there can be a little bit more, I think, for Michael at this point.
Hey, Matt, look at Travis Zajac, a player I played at University of North Dakota and a Winnipeg native. A guy who had a great start to his career. Had the injury, didn't have a great season before the season prior to this season where he incurred the injury to his knee. Where has, in last year, I think a little bit of a rebound season, what is he, you know, he's the highest paid player on the team, and is he the best player on the team, or maybe put a different way, does he need to be the best player on this team for this team to make the playoffs?
Well, I think he would tell you that he needs to be better than he has been, certainly. He talked the other day about confidence, and you know, it seems to me that when things are rolling for Trav, and he's not unlike a lot of players in this way, but it might be a little bit more in his case. When he's rolling, you know, I mean, it's a delight. But when the game gets away from him a little bit, his game, I think he fights his confidence a lot. Also, keep in mind that he had Zach Parise as a winger, mm-hmm. or Ilya Kovalchuk as a winger, and that makes it obviously a lot easier. Last year, the Devils, they were just not constituted well. Kobe was there, but then he got hurt. Beyond that, trying to replace Zach Parise, it was a combination of players who, you know, had flashes in their NHL career, but nothing sustained, and the Devils were hoping to recapture some of that. They got Ponikrovsky back, and, you know, Bobby Butler and Matt D'Agostini, but nothing sustained. And I think that hurt Travis, too. But I agree with you, and as I said, he would say the same if he was on the line or sitting next to you guys, that, you know, his play has to come up. The Devils have committed to him as being a huge part of their present and their future, and he's got to produce a little bit more.
43 minutes after the top of the hour, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca, joined by Matt Lachlan, Devils play-by-play man on WFAN Radio.
Matty, we wanted to ask you about Adam Henrique, a player that I really like on the Devils, and a guy that's had quite a bit of success against the Jets here, and he's been playing center and wing. where would you prefer to see him in the lineup? Because I know that he's excelled in both areas, but he's played more at center. Where do you think he should stay this season?
I think he's better suited at center, and I think that's where he now feels more comfortable. But the Devils have a little depth there, and last night, they had one guy was a healthy scratch, Andrei Loktionov, who pretty much can only play center. It's just he just doesn't fit in the wing spot, and so that gave Pete a chance to move Adam back to the center spot. But I think that's where he is best. Last night he scored a goal, his first of the season, and that lifted a burden for him. He is another one of the big question marks for the Devils. There's no doubt that two seasons ago he was terrific breaking into the league, and he's a Calder finalist for Rookie of the Year, scored two huge goals in the playoffs, including the one that will live forever in Devils history, the one that eliminated the Rangers in the Eastern Conference Finals. And then last year, again, the lockout, he starts in Albany, suffers an injury, never quite got on track, though he did have 11 goals. And so I think everyone is wondering, and maybe even Adam himself, okay, where is he? Is he the Rookie of the Year guy or Rookie of the Year candidate who had a terrific season, or is he the one whose play has dipped? He wouldn't be the first in league history that we saw found a different level off a good rookie year. I think he's got more, but now he's got to show it. But again, Pete's rotating him a little bit, and it's all about – that's why I think I go back to it, and I'm sorry for rambling here, but I go back to this Devils team needs to have maybe 10 games, but I think maybe even 10 home games, because we play so many on the road here at the start through the early part of October, that I think you need to give this team some time. And as long as they can stay within distance, a reasonable distance of those who are in playoff spots, and it's ridiculous at this point to really focus on that, but as long as they stay close, then I think that they're allowed to build something. But it's got to start soon, and so I think that applies to the team, and it applies to some of the players. Okay, give you some time, but as we get into double digits of games played, you need to see results.
By the way, Matt, you don't ever have to apologize for rambling on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, because Drew rambles for 2 hours every weekend. So,
Matt, we're speaking of Adams, and Adam Larson is obviously a top prospect defenseman, drafted in the top five a couple years ago. Was a healthy scratch recently for the Devils game in Vancouver, and was not happy about it. Quoted as being not happy about it, and has had a meeting after that game with the coaches to discuss it. What's come from that, and is there a discord between the two?
Well, I think Adam is puzzled. He had a great, and I mean a terrific camp. He was dominant. He gave every indication that his confidence had been restored, that he was poised and determined to make this year the year where everyone stood up and took notice and said, aha, that's why the Devils drafted him so highly. And then the game started, and for whatever reason, his play dropped down a little bit. Now, I don't think he has been the Devils' worst defenseman by far, but we're not able to figure out why it was that he got scratched versus some of the others. It quite possibly could be that the Devils see the potential there, and they need to continue to hammer home the point that, hey, you've got to play every night. And he's still only 20, so you would think he would figure it out going into his third year, but maybe it's still an every-night process with him. I don't think, again, I think there were other candidates. I don't think he was the one who had to be scratched against Vancouver, but that was the choice by the coaches. Got back in the lineup last night. There was still some tentativeness in his play, and I think he's in that uncomfortable spot between the coaches tell me I have to do this, and I can do that. I can be aggressive, and I can be involved offensively, and I can take the body. But if I make a mistake, they hammer me for not being consistent. And that's a terrible place for any player to be in. And so I think he's struggling to find his way through expectations, both of his own and the coaching staff, and the reality of playing in this league.
Matt, we'll let you go on this last question. We've mentioned him sort of in passing so far. How much does this team, if at all, the team and the organization miss Ilya Kovalchuk?
They miss him. There's no question about it. Look, and we see it a bit with Jaromir Jagr, and maybe more than a little bit. At 41, when he gets the puck, he still has the skills, and he attracts two players because he's got great skills. Now, they're not as great as they were when he was 31, but he still has it. And you'll see it tomorrow night. Everyone says, ooh, 68's got the puck. We better make sure we get some guys over there. Kovalchuk has the same type of skills. And when he's on the ice, you better pay attention. And for all that Patrick Elias has done, and as I mentioned his numbers earlier, Michael Ryder has been a consistent goal scorer in this league. They are not the type of player that makes a coaching staff say we need to game plan for them. They can beat you, but you don't have to specifically game plan for them. When the Devils had number 17 on the ice, you had to pay attention. So now others have to step out of that shadow. Others have to contribute. The depth has to show. And again, it's all part of what this team is going through. But there's no question they miss him. Long term, I think getting that contract off their books may help them in other ways. And yeah, perhaps some players were guilty of hoping 17 would carry the load on a given night. So it might be good, again, long term, to get back to an organizational philosophy of everyone contributes, everyone has a role. But there's no doubt that when you need just one more goal, and that's been the difference right now for the Devils at the start of the season, that extra goal that could put it away or win it in a shootout. They haven't scored yet in a shootout. They've not been able to beat a goalie in a shootout. Ilya Kovalchuk is a difference maker. So, yeah, they miss him in the early going.
Matt Lachlan, Devils broadcaster on WFAN Radio. Thanks very much for joining us on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, and we hope you enjoy your evening in Winnipeg, of course. Good, sir.
Fellas, thanks very much. Always a pleasure, and I will enjoy my night in the Peg, no question.
Thanks, Matt.
All right, guys.
Let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Big thank you to Matty Lachlan, good friend of the program, for joining us to discuss the New Jersey Devils here.
Oh, he's
on
a
TSN.
Friend of the program.
Are you a friend of the program? Anyways, in case you missed any of that interview, it will be available for download on iTunes. Search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, subscribe, and get it sent to your iPod each and every week.
Remus here yet?
Remus is here, yeah.
I gotta say, Drew, I'm loving the New York theme we got here. Matty Lachlan from New Jersey, you know, New York similar. Andrew Gross is coming up. Amanda Stein of TSN 690 is in New York. I like it. I'm just saying, I like the New York, the connection of all the guests.
Okay. Glad you like it.
Love New York. Great city.
Why has Drew dismissed that comment by you?
It was dismissive.
I prefer to no-sell most of Ezzy's comments. I find that to be more humorous and enjoyable for yours truly.
If Drew had the option, he would just wear earplugs on the left side because I sit to his left here, and he just wouldn't listen to me. He would just see my mouth moving, and then when my mouth stopped moving, he would continue, right? If you had the option.
If we had the
technology here at TSN 1290.
I'm sure I could go out to, you know, buy a pair of earplugs. I'm pretty sure the technology does exist.
Yeah, that's true.
Anyways, a couple suspensions in and around the NHL this week. I want to start in Buffalo. Patrick Kaleta.
That was ugly. He should get 10 games for that.
Yeah.
He's got an in-person hearing, so we don't know the number of games yet, but you know it's going to be a minimum of 5. Mm-hmm. Because when it's in-person, it's a minimum of 5. His hit on Jack Johnson of the Columbus Blue Jackets.
Yep.
Johnson hit him so hard he thought he was making banana pancakes.
I was waiting for that one.
Yeah, I thought you saw that cover a mile away.
Badoom ching.
Thank you. Let me ask you, why doesn't that song?
Can we play Banana Pancakes later?
Yeah, you can play it later.
It's a great song.
Maybe we should go for lunch after and have banana pancakes.
I actually was going to say one time I liked the song so much that I started making banana pancakes while listening to banana pancakes. Then in the middle of it, I was like, okay, I've been listening to too much Jack Johnson.
I don't know how to make banana pancakes.
Why doesn't Patrick Kaleta get more criticism for his reckless play in the NHL?
Then as he went to McDonald's, got pancakes and started eating banana beside
Richie.
Okay, sorry.
Okay, in all seriousness, though, Kaleta,
he's a bum,
has been suspended 4 times now, and we remember when he was suspended for 5 games for boarding Brad Richards,
mm-hmm.
and John Tortorella, remember, he was super upset and went on that rant about Patrick Kaleta.
He's a bum.
Patrick Kaleta is a dirty player, and in that game, by the way, if you saw the hit, you can watch it on YouTube if you haven't seen it, or TSN.ca if you haven't seen it. Jared Bull comes in and fights Patrick Kaleta right after. And Patrick Kaleta can fight. I mean, he's not the type of guy that won't fight. But This is the stuff they're trying to get out of the game. Remember after the first couple of games, guys? George Perros and that incident. But this is the stuff they're trying to take out, these head hits. And I actually liked how they suspended Brad Stewart for 3 games. You could have probably suspended for 5 or 6 games.
Brad Stewart suspended for his hit on Alex Edler.
Right.
And, 3 games.
And that's why.
Rick Nash.
Yeah.
We'll talk about the Alex Edler. Alex Edler's hit was on Thomas Hurdle.
Yeah, you keep talking Edler's, like that up in your plugs.
No, but you know what, Drew? These are the things they're trying to take out. You suspend a guy for 3 games. He loses thousands of dollars, right? So you hit him in the pocketbook. These guys don't want to lose money. I think Brendan Shanahan is doing a really good job. And I think, yeah, you could make the argument that, you know, maybe Stewart, again, gets 5-6 games instead of 3. But Coletta, I think they're going to throw the book at him.
And they should. He's a dirty player. He has one skill. You know what his skill is?
Drawing penalties.
Because he's an agitator. But he's a dirty agitator, and there's no place for this guy in the game. Give him 10 games.
What about the Alex Edler hit on Thomas Hurdle?
Headhunter, too. He's suspended right now in the NHL. He's suspended right now in Olympic hockey. Runs at Eric Staal last year in the World Championships. Was it Mike Smith he ran at last year? The guy has no regard. If you watch the play, my biggest issue is this. Either you hit the body on that hit, or you play the puck. He did not look at the puck. He disregarded the puck and hit him right in the head. So that should be a significant suspension.
I think Edler should get 5 games for that.
And you know, he got three.
You know, oh, he did get suspended.
Yeah,
he got three games.
More than that.
Okay.
You're saying it's not enough?
No, it's not enough.
No. It's Edler. Richie mentioned that. Edler knows he's one of Vancouver's top defensemen. I don't know what he's thinking on these.
Yep.
He's not going to start. Richie mentioned the Olympics. He's already been suspended for that dirty play on Eric Staal. I don't know what he's doing because the Canucks need him in the lineup.
Yep.
That was a dirty play. And that was a dirty play on a guy. The NHL is I don't fault them. It's the players that are not getting it. I mean, what does the NHL have to do? Should he be suspended for 20 games? Loses a quarter of his salary? I mean,
That's the disconnect we always talked about. My dad used to talk about it. The disconnect is, are you protecting the guy's pocketbook who got suspended, or are you protecting the health of the guy who just got hurt?
I think they're trying.
He might get paid, but he can't think.
You have Hurdle. Everyone saw his 4 goals. Teenage Mutant Ninja Hurdle.
Yeah.
It's a great nickname.
You haven't heard that one, Drew?
I haven't heard that one yet.
I didn't come up with
that.
That
was Drew Remenda of Comcast.
Yeah, it was Drew Remenda.
The Sharks broadcaster.
Yeah. We've had him on before. We'll have him on again. Friend of the show.
FOS?
Yep. When you have a guy like Hurdle who he's got a bright future ahead of him, and then Edler goes out and does this, I mean, that to me is a bigger problem than the fighting. I know I don't want to open up Pandora's box here, but these guys got to be smarter with what they're doing here. They got to be smarter. It's a dirty play. Richie's right. You take the puck, you take the body. It's a cheap shot.
They're all repeat offenders, too. That's the worst part. They're all repeat offenders.
And if they're a repeat offender and Edler only got 3 games, is Brendan Shanahan letting him off lightly there?
Probably, yeah.
I don't think he's. He could have easily given him a couple more games. I think. I bet he was considering it. It's tough, like these suspensions, because you know that it's not just Shanahan. They take a lot of time on these decisions. Mm-hmm. They know it's not just something that they come up with in 20 minutes.
Let's go to break.
Yeah,
when we come back, Andrew Gross of the Bergen Record to talk about the New York Rangers. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN 1290.ca.
Two hours down, 1 hour to go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290, TSN1290.ca. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website is www.illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
He covers the New York Rangers for the Bergen Record in New Jersey. Andrew Gross, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, my pleasure. How's everything going today?
Everything's going very well in Winnipeg. Can't say the same for the New York Rangers on their West Coast trip. Embarrassed the past 2 games against the Anaheim Ducks and the San Jose Sharks. You know, why? That's almost the only question you can ask.
Well, it's a lot of mental lapses, particularly defensively. A lot of turnovers. They're not getting the goaltending they're used to from Henrik Lundqvist. They're still trying to, you know, assimilate themselves into what Alain Vigneault is trying to implement in terms of the system. It's been a wretched travel schedule. I mean, you know, it sounds like excuses, but there really are, you know, some factors that are kind of going into this. And, you know, I think it starts with the travel. This is, you know, a team that's starting the season on a 9-game road trip because Madison Square Garden is still undergoing some renovations. And it's not just the start of the regular season. It was a really dysfunctional preseason for them. You know, they only had a few days around in New York. They didn't play, you know, they played the Devils and the Flyers locally. And then they, you know, they go off to Western Canada in Las Vegas, basically. And then they have a mini training camp out in Banff, and I'm sure these guys feel like they've been on the road for a month, and that's pretty much what it is. And again, you know, these are professional athletes, and they have to adapt to the situation. But this is a pretty rough go. I think these guys are pretty gassed, and they're just not getting it right now.
Andrew, any truth to the jokes that the Rangers' preseason schedule was based strictly upon where Glenn Sather has other homes?
I didn't see a game in Palm Springs, but maybe next year. Yeah, we've heard those jokes as well. I will say this. You talk about the start, and we were talking to Ken Hitchcock, the Blues coach, this morning, and he, you know, I was asking him about, you know, jumping on the Rangers early like the Ducks did, and he said, let me tell you how it works in this league. The first thing you do when you look at your schedule at the beginning of the season is see if you're playing at San Jose on the second night of a back-to-back. Because if you are, you just know you're screwed. He goes, you know, no matter what you do before that, and the Rangers had won 3-1 in Los Angeles the night before, he said going into San Jose on the second night of a back-to-back against that team is just always a nightmare, and it basically wrecks you for the week. And he said, and that's what happened in Anaheim 2 days later when they lost 6-0 off a 9-2 loss, is just that they were still ruined from playing the Sharks. And, you know, I haven't had the time to go through everyone's schedule and see, you know, how much empirical evidence there is for that. But that was Hitch's take on it, that the Sharks just took everything out of the Rangers.
You wrote, Andrew, in the Bergen Record this morning about, you know, Alain Vigneault not having the same allegiance to certain players that obviously John Tortorella had, and that maybe if this play continues, we could see some changes. And you specifically mentioned the possibility of Marty Biron, you know, having an important start because he very well could be out the door. Can you elaborate on that?
I just think, and it was a, you know, sort of a on the beat column like story, but article. But my take on this is, you know, Alain Vigneault has been hired. He's got a 5-year deal. You know, that they switched coaches already. So if this doesn't go well, Glenn Sather's next move is not to switch coaches again. I mean, it's going to work with Alain Vigneault for a while. He's going to be given some time here. And if, you know, if Vigneault, based on what he sees, you know, feels like some of these guys can't play or give him what he wants, I think the move would be to kind of shake up the roster rather than, you know, get another coach in who can coach these guys. And I just get the sense that, you know, Vigneault is not 100% sold on being able to get out of Marty Biron what he needs in this Olympic season, you know, because he's going to have to start the backup, you know, 20, 22, 23 games this season. So, you know, I think it's a very important start for Marty tonight to kind of show that, you know, he can be up to the task that Vigneault wants. And, you know, there's some players, particularly on defense here, who need to start playing a lot better. And show AV that, you know, that they can work with this guy. And, you know, it's in the salary cap world, it's of course easier said than done, you know, to shake up the roster. But I don't think Glenn's going to be waiting until the trade deadline if they're still stumbling along here.
Andrew, Rick Nash left the game earlier this week against the San Jose Sharks after the hit Brad Stewart laid on him, and he was obviously suspended by the NHL for that. Can you give our listeners an update on how Rick Nash is doing in the days following that hit?
Well, he was sent home prior to the game against Anaheim on Thursday. He was sent back to New York, so he's not around the team right now. We haven't spoken to AV yet today, and there really was no update off of basically he was suffering from headaches is what he was complaining of, and the Rangers are at least specifying it as a head injury, if not specifically saying a concussion, which is pretty much what we all, that's what your eyes would tell you happened there, right? So, as with any concussion, it's just, it's individual, and it's how much time the individual needs. We'll get back to New York. There's a practice there Monday, and it'll be interesting to see if Rick's around the practice facility or not. You know, last season when he got concussed, it cost him 4 games. But, as these studies show, with each successive concussion, there's more and more danger and more susceptibility. So, I don't think you can guarantee that Nash would be back within the same 4-game span.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, online at tsn1290.ca. We're joined by Andrew Gross. He covers the New York Rangers for the Bergen Record. Andrew, a lot of talk in the offseason about will they, won't they, and that's in regards to the Rangers buying out Brad Richards. How has he looked this season, separated from John Tortorella after the end with the playoffs last season?
I got to be honest, he looks like, he looks like a confident player on the ice again. He's got, 3 goals, so he's leading the team there. He's looked confident. But again, within the grand context, the team's 1-3. So really, you can't start singing his praises because the team's not playing well. But Brad Richards has not been one of the problems through the first 4 games. He's lived up to his end of the bargain. He seems like a happier guy in the room. It just seems like the cloud that was over him all of last season, and it was a pretty dark cloud. And he was a gloomy guy last season. That's not the case right now.
And that relationship hasn't been repaired, has it?
No. I don't think there's much interest on Brad's part to get it repaired. When we were out in Vancouver in the preseason, he said all the right things, and he does feel bad about how it ended. This kid was a kid that won a Stanley Cup with me, that type of stuff. But I don't get the sense from Brad's point of view that he has much interest in, at this point in time, really, restoking those fires.
I don't blame him, really. You look at this roster, Andrew, obviously you watch it far more closely than we do, but it seems like there's a little bit of a weakness on the wings, and especially with Carl Hagelin being out. How much has that injury cost the team thus far?
Yeah. I mean, because you're squeezing guys, or you're trying to get guys to play in the top six who are not top six guys, essentially. Matt Zuccarello is a good part, but, I don't think he's a consistent top six player in this league. And kind of, Benoit Pouliot's issue throughout his career is he has top six skill, but he hasn't been able to, be consistent in that manner. And these are guys you're playing up there. And Brian Boyle, too, is getting a top six shot. And I really think, Hagelin not being in there is really kind of damaging the balance throughout the lineup. And, also the fact that Derek Stepan, after a lengthy contract dispute, he comes in late, and, his game is not up to where the Rangers need it to be right now. And, if you can't count on him as a top six player, then you really have balance issues throughout your lineup.
Andrew, we got to ask you about Mark Stahl because, this is an Olympic year, and he's coming off of that eye injury, and I have to imagine that he would really like to be on that Olympic team with his brother Eric. How have you liked his play so far this season?
I think I wrote today that there are 5 defensemen struggling, and one who's playing pretty good, and that's Mark Stahl. He's looked you know, through the preseason and right into the start of the season, he has not been an issue. He's playing, you know, and again, this is couched within the fact that the team is not playing well, but, you know, he seems to be getting back to that level where he was before the concussion and before the right eye, you know, got permanently dilated and injured and loss of vision. I mean, it seems like we're going to get a Mark Stahl season out of Mark Stahl this year.
13 minutes past the top of the hour, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. We're joined by Andrew Gross. He covers the New York Rangers for the Bergen Record newspaper in New Jersey.
Andrew, you know, we talked about the changes, obviously John Tortorella being there and being in New York last year and the years prior, and now Alain Vigneault, and their totally kind of different demeanor, at least as far as we can tell. Have you noticed a difference in the locker room day-to-day with the players and their demeanor?
Certainly through the preseason, the players seemed a lot more relaxed, you know, because, you know, Torch is not breathing fire down him, as it sort of was towards the end of, you know, his tenure here, where it got a little bit tense. But at the same time, I mean, really, the only thing players care about, you know, hard coach, player-friendly coach, all the players want to do is win. So they'll respond to a coach that gets them wins. So, you know, right now, you know, AB is not, he doesn't have his foot all the way down on the pedal against these guys. But at the same time, he's going to have to show that his system can win games for him at some point. And again, that's on the players to start performing better. But, you know, with the players, they'll look to the coaching staff for answers. So, you know, AV can be and may be one of the nicer, more personable coaches in the league. But, you know, no wins, the players aren't going to like that. So it all comes down to that. But, yeah, you know, you definitely notice a more relaxed atmosphere around the organization, at least prior to the last two games.
Andrew, I know it's early and it's only been four games, but I think you'd agree that Henrik Lundqvist hasn't been, you know, the Henrik Lundqvist that we expect him to be. Do you think that the fact that he's a pending unrestricted free agent is a distraction at all, or is that something that, you know, is maybe something that's being fabricated by maybe the media?
You know, it's kind of tough to say. I do think it weighed on his mind. Otherwise, he wouldn't have said that he doesn't want to talk about it once the season starts, because it would be a distraction to him. Now, how well he can compartmentalize and, you know, not really think about it. I mean, to be fair, he's going to get his money, and, you know, it's just a matter of whether it's from the Rangers or, you know, somewhere else, but he's going to get paid. But you know what? Some people deal with uncertainty in different ways. The last time Henrik was up for a contract, which was what, you know, this is a six-year deal, so he was early in his career, and that deal got done, I believe, in January, this current six-year deal that he's on. He didn't play distracted that year. So, you know, I don't know whether this would be different, probably because, you know, at age 31 going on 32 in March, you know, he realizes this is his last big payday, probably as an NHL goalie, if he gets this, you know, eight seasons from the Rangers that they can give him. But, you know, he doesn't want to talk about it. He says he's not talking about it with his agent. But, of course, you know, unless you're living inside Henrik Lundqvist's brain, it's kind of tough to say whether he can shut it off or not.
Final question, Andrew, just not really talking about the team right now. Mark Messier was the guy who was a candidate, or discussed as a candidate, for the position that Alain Vigneault eventually got. And there's now rumblings, I think it was last week on Hockey Night in Canada, that Messier is moving over to the Edmonton Oilers. How did that relationship, obviously Mark Messier and Glenn Sather had a close relationship for many, many years. Are they still close, or is there a discord between the two of them?
Yeah, you know what? I got the sense that Mess did not leave the organization happy. You know, I think he didn't. Whether he was gung-ho to be the coach or whether Glenn approached him and said, hey, maybe this is something you should apply for, I'm not sure of the particulars there, but the way it ended up, where I think Mess thought, you know, I think he thought he was going to be the coach. And that was not the case. I think there were, when he walked out the door, there were a few hard feelings that I'm not 100% sure have been repaired yet.
Andrew Gross, he covers the New York Rangers for the Bergen Record in New Jersey. Thanks very much for joining us on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
My pleasure. Have a great afternoon, guys.
You too, Andrew. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Andrew.
Let's go to break. You're listening to TSN 1290 online at tsn1290.ca.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on tsn1290.ca.
Good job, Timmy. You don't know what song this is, Drew?
This is just a beautiful... Can't you see
that it's just...
Hold on, let it go.
I can't actually hear it, because I accidentally stepped on my headphones.
Oh, right, let it play.
You know what, Drew, if only the rest of the radio community can do that to you. Baby, you hardly
even know. You're so kind. You're a good friend. Anyways, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey
Show.
It's a
great song. This is a great song. Like, this is one of my favorite songs of all time.
Again, is it Banana Pancakes?
Yeah.
Because I can't hear it right now because, again, my headphones are just... I just busted my own headphones.
Can you just picture Ezzy going to buy pancakes and eating a banana while he's, like, chewing, like, a bite of a banana and, like, a bite of the pancake, and he's like... Mm.
I mean, I just assume that happens on a weekly basis. Never mind picture it. Anyways.
I think... The Jets
would you put the syrup directly on the banana, too? How would you do that?
I think the Jets should listen to that song to get ready for Sunday and just take their mind off of the loss. Forget about it. It's over. And just listen to that song. It'll put you in a good mood.
Is there a hammock available, too, they should sit in?
Yeah, hammock. You can go down to the hammock district to get your hammocks. But I don't know what's going on over there with Drew. He's trying to, you know, get his headphones working.
I'll get them working one of these. One of these minutes, I'll get my headphones back working. Don't you worry, boys. You can just carry the conversation as is. This banana pancakes conversation, I'm sure, is riveting to the audience, undoubtedly.
Oh, yeah.
Anyways, I want to spend a couple minutes. The controversy, call what you like, out of Vancouver from earlier this week regarding Joe Thornton's comments and should have they been reported and were they inappropriate? And
why don't you enlighten the listeners who aren't aware of what happened?
Well, exactly right. After the Thomas Hertl performance from earlier this week when he got the 4 goals, all the big hullabaloo in the NHL was the 4th goal inappropriate by shooting it through the legs and everything else?
No, it wasn't inappropriate.
Yeah, we agreed with that. That was the consensus. We talked about it on Wednesday. But it was continuing to be a story for the last... couple of days, and Joe Thornton in the San Jose Sharks dressing room in Vancouver was asked whether or not, or he wasn't actually asked.
Right.
It was being talked
Patrick
about.
Marleau was
Patrick
asked.
Marleau was being asked.
That's right.
His thoughts on the goal. And then Joe Thornton, not involved in the scrum, in the media gathering whatsoever, hollered over.
Doesn't Remus have the clip actually edited?
I'm not sure if he does. He should have it ready, but yeah. If he can, we'll pull it up.
Yeah.
Anyways, Joe Thornton hollered over a bit of a crude response to it, and everybody chuckled and went on their way. Jason Botchford of the Vancouver Province accurately reported what Thornton said, and then the big hand-wringing was about whether or not he should have reported what Thornton said, or was it made in an off-the-record moment that is sacrosanct in the code of the locker room between media and the players.
What do you think?
What do I think?
Yeah.
I think that Jason Botchford is not paid by the Vancouver Canucks or the San Jose Sharks. I think Jason Botchford's paid by the Vancouver Province, and the audience of the Vancouver Province probably thought it was an interesting quote.
I think you're nuts. I don't think you ever report that.
I
have a huge issue with it.
Richie, I want to hear why.
Okay, play the clip first.
Surprised that a few people criticized Thomas's goal, said he was showboating and that kind of thing.
Yeah, I don't.
You ever played?
Hey, I'm not being critical. I'm not.
I think it'd be.
Next
to already have 3 goals and it's a good opportunity to try something like that, but I don't think it's showboating at all. I think it's just him having fun playing a game. And,
I'd have my.
It's nice to see.
Patrick, what the.
Okay, by the way, Reem, good on Reem for getting that clip.
Yeah.
There was obviously some expletives. You could hear the guys in the dressing room and the media laughing about it. First of all, I want to get Richie in here too. But the comment itself is something that for everyone who's played hockey or been in a dressing room before, stuff like that is said all the time.
Of course, all the time.
Rec hockey, junior hockey, pro hockey, there's F-bombs and swears and all. That's not the issue. The issue here for me is, why is this even news, and why was it ever reported? Like, why are we even talking
about this? Why was it reported? Because Jason Botchford wants attention.
Yeah, it's funny.
That's why it's reported.
To me, it's a funny comment. Is it inappropriate? Is it crude? Of course. But hockey dressing rooms are not libraries.
Look, I don't think for a second that Jason Botchford... I think he did it so that he can get his name out there a little bit more. I don't doubt that for one second whatsoever. But, I mean...
Like, what's the point?
Who are the masters? I mean, you know, what is the journalist's responsibility?
Not to talk about stuff that goes on like that, because Ezra's in the room, David Manuk, Leo Kravetkov, they're in the room. I bet you there's stuff that happens all the time in there. Do you hear Ezra coming on the station talking about it?
No.
I mean, but...
Come on.
But again, not just in
NHL... Have some class!
In NHL rooms...
Jason Botchford.
It's not appropriate to report stuff like that. I mean, like...
Fun getting another story, ever.
Who needs to hear that stuff?
Of any of those guys.
Right. He won't get another story.
Have fun getting another story to Vancouver after that.
No, I don't think...
in Vancouver would ever say anything.
I don't think they will. And I mean, I think he would probably know that. And I think he would probably say... You know, maybe that's the risk I'm taking right now.
Broke the code.
Yeah,
100% broke the code.
He did break the code.
No
I
question
agree
about
with Richie
it.
There.
I have a huge issue with it. He completely broke code.
I get where you're coming from, and I'll play devil's advocate here, because frankly, I don't think that this is a story that
I wouldn't penalize all the reporters. I'd penalize him. For sure,
Munsey was on the morning show and talking about it, and they said that you think that the guy should be suspended from the dressing room for a couple games.
Yeah, that's fine, or time him out, limit him to something. Yeah, I like the suspension idea because I don't want to blame the other reporters because they don't do anything wrong. But he shouldn't spoil it for everyone.
In the general terms, and not specific to this issue, should reporters in general be protecting players?
I don't think it's about protecting players. I think it's about, in this case, first of all, he wasn't being interviewed at the time. And the comments that people make in the dressing room when they're not being interviewed shouldn't be reported on. And especially when it's something crude and I'm going to go on both sides here, okay?
You want to get a story? You want to get a quote?
I'm not a saint by any stretch of the imagination, but comments like that happen all the time. If you don't know that, then you just don't get hockey, because stuff like that happens. And a lot of the time, it doesn't get reported because it's not appropriate. It's not appropriate to report stuff like that.
Let me ask you guys this question. And Hustler, I was going to ask it, and Hustler just tweeted at us and asked us the same thing.
Sure.
If Thornton or any player X, a guy who's getting scrummed and player X hollers over interrupting the scrum and uses a racist term or a homophobic term, should the reporters protect that player?
That's different.
Why is it different?
It is different.
What do you mean, why is it different?
It's a different...
What are you talking about? It's completely different.
It's completely different. If someone made a racist comment, yes. And hold on.
There's a racist comment. That's a different story. If there's a homophobic comment, that's a different story.
We're missing the point here, though. The point isn't protecting
the player. So reporters have there's a code up to a point, is what you're saying.
I wouldn't report it anyways. You may want to talk to somebody in the team about it, but I wouldn't report it.
So there is a code, but the code goes to a certain level.
Yeah, and then if that was an issue, I would speak to somebody in the team, maybe the PR guy about it or something like that. But I wouldn't just go put it in the paper. I wouldn't.
Drew, the code isn't, in this case, isn't protecting the player. It's protecting what's said in that room.
Mm-hmm.
And not reporting stuff whatever you want to call it, potty mouth.
Don't report that. I can't be reported that. Come on.
I
can believe it. But I can't believe it.
You're saying you can believe it because of who he is?
Yeah, yeah.
Because he's looking to make a name for himself.
In my opinion...
That's not the way to do it.
In my opinion, yeah. Maybe not exact. Yeah, that's fair.
Make a name for yourself by doing good reporting, by covering the team and writing good stories and asking good questions, not by reporting something that was said...
I don't have too much time for... Sorry to interrupt, Desi. I don't have too much time for Jason Botch. We've had him on the show before. I'm not going to get into all that stuff, but I'm just going to say that guys like Ben Kuzma and other guys out there do a really good job and are a little bit less bombastic, but I would judge them on the quality of their work more than anything else, and I hold them in higher regard, I'll put it that way.
Do you think Joe Thornton thought that someone was going to report that? When you say stuff in the dressing room, they don't think you're going to report
that. He's a great quote. Have fun with that now.
Yeah, he's not going to talk to Botchford.
I wouldn't. Not with any guy in that room. I wouldn't talk to him if I was in the Canucks.
Player code at that point?
Yeah, why not?
Let's go to break. When E-bro we come back, code. Amanda Stein from TSN 690 is going to join us. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
I'm going to report what you said during the break, Drew. And let me tell you, you'll be fired in 5 minutes.
Every time we're on air and we manage to come back in the next week, I'm always impressed. So, you know, you never know. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest NHL and Winnipeg Jets news is www.illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From our sister station, TSN 690 in Montreal, we welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, Amanda Stein. Amanda, good afternoon, and thanks for taking some time away from your vacation to join us.
Gentlemen, thank you for having me. I appreciate it. The pleasure's mine. Don't worry about it.
Well, we appreciate that. Amanda, you know, the Habs are going to be in Winnipeg for their only visit on Tuesday night. What's the feeling around the Montreal Canadiens after the success of last season, or last regular season, to be more specific?
Yeah, and I think you hit the nail on the head there. It goes to the regular season because the way the season finished last year, there was a lot of disappointment around this team. So I think, you know, there was less so, you know, hype around the fact that they did so well in the regular season, and more so they've got to improve on their postseason and what they did there, because as we all know, that's when it really counts. And certainly when we got back into the season during training camp, during the first couple of days, that is really the focus, is that, you know, we didn't do well enough in that postseason, you know, just going through one round and leaving after the first round or being eliminated after the first round wasn't good enough for them. And that's their focus, is to build upon that and also remember the positive things that they did during the regular season.
You know, Amanda, when people talk about the Habs, they talk about maybe the three-pronged attack of Galchenyuk for the future, Galchenyuk and then Subban and Price. Can you talk about Galchenyuk specifically and how good he's been thus far and what you think the expectations are for him this year?
Oh, absolutely. He certainly, he was a prized possession when he was drafted. I remember being, I wasn't at the draft, but the Canadians held this big party, a draft party, and the place went wild when they drafted Alex Galchenyuk. And when he came into the season last year, I don't know that necessarily there were tons of really, really high expectations. I think people were wary about a rookie coming in and just, you know, making sure that he's managed properly. And I think last year he certainly surpassed everybody's expectations. And so anytime you surpass someone's expectations, particularly in Montreal, an extra level of expectation for the next year is there. And I got to tell you, from the beginning of this season, they've only got a couple games under their belt, but he has absolutely not regressed in any way. It's that line that he's played, that he had been playing on with Eller and Gallagher, has been on fire in the best line so far. And certainly I think as we go forward here, the hope is that he can continue along the path that he's on, being the playmaker, scoring those big goals, and hopefully as he gets older, build up his body a bit more. He's a strong-looking guy now, but you know that he can be a bit stronger and use his body a little bit more.
Maddie, you mentioned Lars Eller and Alex Galchenyuk and Brendan Gallagher. And Alex Galchenyuk and Brendan Gallagher, speaking of not regressing, it seems like they've picked up where they left off last year. Is the plan to keep those guys on the same line based on the fact that they're playing so well together early on this season?
It's funny you should mention that, because certainly if I were the coach, I would imagine, yes, you'd want to keep your most productive line together. But a word out of Vancouver, and of course I'm not there, so I'm getting the information secondhand, is that tonight Eller will not be on that line with Galchenyuk and Brendan Gallagher. He's going to be on a line with Pacioretty and Briere. And so when you have something like what Montreal is going through right now, they have this really high-scoring line that you just mentioned, but they also have this line that's really certainly regressed from last year, which was Desharnais, Pacioretty, and with the addition of Danny Briere. They haven't seen what they've wanted from that line. And in Montreal, what tends to happen is the most productive player gets bumped up to that position. They've tried Brandon Prust on that line, but now tonight they're going to go with Lars Eller. So it will break that chemistry up between that line, but I wouldn't be surprised if they make changes on the fly. If they're not getting the offensive output that they need tonight against the Vancouver Canucks, I'd certainly see that line, the three of them reunited. Certainly, they've been the best so far. They've been pretty much accounting for everything that's been going on offensively.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. We're joined by Amanda Stein. She covers the Montreal Canadiens for TSN 690 in Montreal. Amanda, we talked about the Canadiens' regular season success last season. Did the team add enough size this offseason to be anything but a regular season success this coming year?
That's a really good question, because when we saw what happened in the postseason last year, I had the opportunity to go on the road in Ottawa, so I was there for all the games, and what sticks out in my mind was that one game in Ottawa, I think it may have been game three or four, and there was one point where there were no one left on the bench because everyone was fighting, and it was just simultaneously all five Montreal Canadiens getting beat up. I want to say, did they add more size? I mean, yes, with George Parros, that certainly helps, but we don't know when he's going to be back after what happened to him in the first game of this season, which was really unfortunate. But what I do like in terms of size and being able to perform better is what we're seeing from Travis Mullen lately. Last year, he was not himself, or perhaps he's now, he was himself and now he's changed. Last year, there was no physicality from him. And this is big coming from me because I'm a big fan of Travis Mullen. But he wasn't playing up to his potential. And I think this year, you're seeing a lot more of the physical side of Travis Mullen, which in turn helps someone like Brandon Prust, who doesn't have to be counted on for all of that. And I think that was a huge problem for this team last year, was that Brandon Prust had to do all of that work, and it weared him out. It wore him out. And so certainly, I think there's improvement. But I don't know that the size is what it is that, the way that Mark Bergevin has improved it, yes. But I don't know to the point where if you're going up against, maybe a Boston Bruins team, whether they're going to be able to handle it. You think about who their marquee player was. Well, Daniel Briere. And certainly, guys, sometimes I think I'm taller than him. I wear my heels in the locker room, right? It's not hard over there.
Amanda, you mentioned George Parros, and Mark Bergevin was quoted about, I think, 3 days ago now, saying that the concussion symptoms were almost gone. Is there any further update with respect to his condition?
No, right now that's all we know is that he is slowly getting better, not quite there yet. My understanding is that he won't be back for a little bit, but it's certainly good to hear. That was a really, really scary moment, guys. At one point, his legs started twitching when he fell to the ice, and I honestly almost threw up. I was so nervous about what was happening. But certainly that is a big loss for this team. When the team was introduced and they have their opening ceremonies, George Parros had the biggest cheer out of anybody, even bigger than PK Subban. And that's pretty big for Montreal. So certainly, no, there's no further update, but I don't expect to see him back for a little bit. They'll have to float along without him for a bit.
Amanda, you mentioned PK Subban, and that leads nicely into my question about PK Subban. A lot of people kind of, forgot, it got lost in his Norris Trophy winning season, that he's only under contract for one more year because he signed that bridge contract. Do you think that's a distraction at all for PK Subban this season?
Trust me, everyone here in Montreal, nobody forgot about that. I can tell you that he's on a bridge contract. I don't think so. I think what he went through last year, I actually had a chance to speak to Carl Subban, his dad, before the season started, and what that was like for the family to watch PK sit down and not be able to watch. And he said that, his son would be at the dinner table and they'd have the Canadiens game on and he'd have his head on the table, not able to watch. He was so upset he wasn't there. I think PK learned a lot about what happened last time around when he did have to sit out the first couple games of the season. I don't see this time around it being a distraction at all. I really think he's very much focused on what he has to do on the ice. And certainly when you have a Norris Trophy year on a bridge contract, well, generally the favor is in the player's hands as opposed to the general manager's. He's got a lot of push, if you will, to get what he wants. And I think he knows that he's got to keep up that performance from last year in order to get that. And I think he can do it. And I don't think that it's something that really bothers him. I think it's more fabricated than anything from the outside. He's a really, really focused individual. He's charismatic. He can be a little crazy at times. He's chirp, he likes to chirp people on the ice. and he has that big shot. But really, when it comes down to it, this is a really focused kid. When you get to, like, actually speak to him, maybe one-on-one, less so in scrums because there's a lot of people around, but I've had the pleasure of having one-on-one conversations with him, he is very, very much focused on what he has to do and seems very capable of blocking everything else out and leaving it to his agent.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, online at tsn1290.ca. We're joined by Amanda Stein. She covers the Montreal Canadiens for TSN 690 in Montreal.
And Amanda, you talk about the first round of the playoffs last year, and one player that the team really seemed to miss at the end of the season and then in the playoffs was Alexei Emelin. He's expected to be back around early December, but there have been some players in the NHL who have come back earlier than anticipated, like Ryan Nugent-Hopkins. Is there any update as to his injury status?
Right now, it's exactly what you said. It's around Christmas time, either a little bit before Christmas or around the new year. And, you know, I'm weary if he comes back a little bit earlier. This is, you know, he's a young kid. He's a very physical defenseman, and that's when he's at his best. And really, he's the type of player that Montreal really needs. They miss him, and they did miss him when he was gone last year, that physical presence on the blue line. Montreal doesn't particularly have the biggest, bulkiest blue line there is now with Jared Tenorti. There's a little more size, but he's a lot more raw in terms of being a rookie. But certainly, there is no further update other than that he's coming along well, and they hope to have him back soon, and that looks to be about somewhere in that December mark. And you can just look at like someone like Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, like you mentioned. You know, he hasn't really been the same, and he's struggled a lot. So I'm hoping that they don't rush Alexei Emelin back into action. But he has been on the ice. We've seen him skate a few times, not with the team yet, so it's certainly good to see him out there and getting the rehabilitation that he needs.
Amanda, we know that Carey Price, you know, is a backbone of the Montreal organization, but
he did
struggle at the end of last year. Do you think that the pressure of this being an Olympic season will affect Carey Price's performance at all?
I sure hope not. I can tell you that. No, I don't think so. I think he's somebody who just, he's a very cool dude. You know, he just takes things as they come, and I think that sometimes people regard that as he's just like nonchalant and doesn't care. But I think it's his coping mechanism to survive in a city like Montreal where he, you know, all the pressure is on him. All the talk is on Carey Price. I remember, you know, back on my show in the middle of, beginning of August, there we are, talking about Carey Price. I don't think that the Olympics will factor into it at all in a negative way. I certainly think it can help him, you know, stay focused to take that number one role, particularly because Canada doesn't have a clear-cut number one, and Carey Price could be there, and he has enjoyed in the past playing for his country. And I know that he's a competitor, and he wants to win. You know, whether he has or not in the NHL at this point is not the point here. It's that he is a winner, and he wants to win, and certainly I know he wants to be on that Sochi team.
Amanda, we'll let you go on this last question. You're kind enough to interrupt your vacation in New York City to join us. Simple question, Katz's Deli or Schwartz's?
Ooh, oh my gosh, you guys. That was insane. I don't know if you saw the pictures I tweeted, but I was at Katz's Deli. That was an adventure in and of itself. I'm going to go with Schwartz's, I got to say. I felt a little sick after Katz's.
I like it, Amanda. You're a true Montrealer. Yeah. You're sticking by Montreal. I like it.
But it is cool that that's where they filmed Where Harry Met Sally. That was cool.
Yeah, I thought it was better, but I'll defer to your Montreal expertise.
No, smoked meat tastes better.
I'm no smoked meat expert, but I think I felt sick after I ate it, so maybe that's that.
Well, you weren't in the studio, but actually during the break, Drew went out for a smoke break and rolled up a cigarette of corned beef.
Wow, that is very classy of you. That is very classy.
You wouldn't expect anything different from us once you get to know us, Amanda, let me tell you.
Yeah, smoked. I was going to say, Amanda, Carey Price is the backbone of the Habs. Smoked meat is the backbone of our show.
Well, there you go. There you go. I like it. Well, certainly, you know what? I hope for Carey, just as an individual and as a person, I really hope he has a good season and that he gets the offensive, you know, production from his teammates and the defensive abilities from his defensemen to be successful this year. Because I have to, as like a person and not as a reporter, as a person, I really feel bad the flack that he gets a lot of the time that sometimes is not really, you know, all that warranted to be directly on his shoulders. And I give him, you know, some mighty props for being able to put up with that, because if I were a goaltender, I don't think I'd ever want to play at Montreal, because I think I'd go insane.
Amanda Stein from TSN 690 in Montreal, thanks very much for joining us this afternoon on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Oh, thanks, guys, for having me. I totally appreciate it.
Appreciate that, Amanda. Have a good vacation. Thanks very much.
No problem. Take care, guys.
Let's go to break. You're listening to TSN 1290 online at tsn1290.ca.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on tsn1290.ca. Command of the Night Brigade. I was
open the plane and crossed by the rain. And I walked on a crooked. One final segment Saturday afternoon here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. tsn1290.ca. Gentlemen, a bit of a moral question for you. Hang on.
Let Bruce breathe a bit, man. All right, go.
Hypothetically speaking...
Should you be asking us moral questions?
That's true. Maybe I'm... Fair enough.
Well, Richie maybe. He's a lawyer, so...
Oh, yeah. There's never been an immoral lawyer before. No, that's never happened.
Whoa. Here come... Is the Manitoba Law Society on the phone?
Here comes a hypothetical situation for you guys. Two people are sitting around having a conversation.
Hold on. What does hypothetical mean?
That's what I figured. Somebody else comes up and is standing over them while these guys are sitting around having a conversation. That individual then drops a hot dog on one of the individuals.
No. What particularly happened was last night Remus went to town on the hot dog. We were watching the game, and he ended up, Remus eats the hot dog in 3 bites. So it's a big hot dog. He takes 3 bites, and it's gone. And it, with under 2 minutes, 100% under 2 minutes. And so Remus, who's close by the mic here now, and he can comment as he wishes, was having a second, I think it was a second bite, third bite of the hot dog. A second bite of the hot dog. Hold on, Remus. 1 second. A second bite of the hot dog. And as he was eating, he was leaning over Drew, and mustard fell off the bottom of the dog right onto Drew's black suit.
That's not what happened. I was like, I was taking my time with this hot dog, eating it, you know,
four bites
at a very reasonable pace. There was like a very small amount left. I went to bite it. The hot dog slips out of the bun because of all the mustard that was on there.
How much did you put on there?
It was a considerable amount. I don't know. It was decent. And then
any ketchup or just mustard?
Just mustard.
No. You don't like ketchup on your dog?
No.
No, and Remus... But
and then the dog slipped out and fell. It hit Drew on the arm. So there was like a little minor
hold on.
Thing.
First of all,
it didn't hit me on the arm. It hit my suit jacket.
Yeah, the arm of your suit jacket.
Yeah, that's fair. But what happened was, instead of then going to grab a napkin, you then finished the rest of the bun and then gave Drew... Then grabbed the napkin, gave it to Drew, a napkin that was already dirty and had been used.
Yeah, that's...
The funniest thing about...
That's accurate.
The funniest thing about all of this is that last night, it was the second intermission... Because at the MTS Center, they bring out the hot dogs for the media during the second intermission. The funniest thing is I'm upstairs, and I was kind of contemplating getting a hot dog. And I was standing there. I think I was talking to Dave Manuk of IllegalCurve.com. And Remus comes upstairs, kind of like running upstairs. He's like, oh, my God, I just spilled mustard on Drew's suit. And he's like frantically running to get napkins.
I'll tell you what, he didn't frantically run that fast. He ate the bun first, and then he
Drew,
gave me a
but
dirty
the
napkin.
Best part of the story is that you took the mustard off your coat, and then you ate it.
That's not true. That didn't actually happen.
I know. I got to back up Remus here quickly, because there wasn't that much mustard. It was barely noticeable. I mean, you're not even going to have to get that suit dry cleaned.
Offered to pay for the dry cleaning. I offered.
He's a drama queen. Drew's a drama queen.
And Remus, you are going to pay for the dry cleaning, because I don't know about you guys, but I don't wear suits with mustard on them.
Are you actually getting a dry clean?
Yes, I'm getting a dry clean.
I wouldn't pay for it. It wasn't dirty enough for me.
Yeah.
Dirty enough for you. You're the guy who freaks out
Richard,
at any
can you
stain.
Represent me in this case?
Yeah, I think we should file a small claim against
Remus should maybe cover half of it.
Drew, send me the bill and I'll give you a check.
I'm going to send you the bill.
Okay.
Small claim for a small stint.
Congratulations.
He's brilliant.
He's a good guy.
And cheers.
No, not good enough. He's a bad boy.
I never seen something stinks like this.
Surprisingly not good.
Ezra, cheer or jeer?
I'm going to cheer Scotty Gomez.
Oh, boy.
Scotty Gomez has had a rough couple years, and he's got 3 points for the Florida Panthers, and he's finding a nice little niche there. Third line center role.
Playing with Huberto and Boys, it might be the first line center role last night.
Yeah, that's right. He did get some time on the first line there. So good for him. He was a great player for so many years, and he's struggled the last couple of years. Speaking of Montreal, you know, he was having a lot of trouble there and was bought out. So, you know, good for him.
Richard? I'm going to give a cheer to Thomas Hertl because I like offensive creativity. And I don't think that goal was anything wrong with that goal. And I know it's much talked about and you can take positions and such. I think that it's a hockey, you know. Is that any worse than the Spinnerama?
No.
So I liked it. I like that the guy has the confidence and the swagger to try that. I like that he feels comfortable enough with his teammates that he can do that too. And you know what? If he didn't score, so be it. Then they would have got really mad and he scored. So, you know, deal with it.
By the way, Mario Lemieux did that back in the day too.
That wasn't intentional. I don't think it was planned. Like, the puck flipped through his legs, and I think but it wasn't, you know,
there's nothing wrong with it. Leave the guy alone. He's a good hockey player. He scored a goal. You know, there's nothing wrong with that.
We have to cheer the wedding we're attending tomorrow,
too. That's right. We'll cheer that. To cheer Mimi and Tom. They're getting married tomorrow, so we'll be attending that wedding. Yep. So, you know, cheer them on their wedding day, of course.
So, Remus, he's taking the next step in the relationship tomorrow.
Yeah, Remus and the lady friend are going out to the wedding together tomorrow.
Yeah. You ready for it, Remus? Remus, you ready? Or you just put the music on?
Cut his mic.
He's just putting the music on. Big thank you to our guests on today's show, Matt Laughlin, New Jersey Devils play-by-play man, Amanda Stein from TSN 690 in Montreal, and Andrew Gross. He covers the New York Rangers for the Bergen Record. In case you missed any of the show, it will be available for download on iTunes, on illegalcurve.com, and on tsn1290.ca. Be sure to subscribe and get it sent to your iPod each and every week. You can follow us on Twitter at illegalcurve, facebook.com/illegalcurve, and our website is www.illegalcurve.com. Big thank you to our sponsors, the Certified General Accountants of Manitoba, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, and the Linden Market Dental Center. For producer Michael Remus and producer Tim, for Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mindell. Wednesday night, 6 p.m., it's NHL Midweek with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. But until then, if it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
You've been listening to
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
Catch The Illegal Curve Hockey Show live Saturdays on TSN 1290 and TSN 1290.ca.